Today is the 26th of the 1st, 2016. I'm interviewing Tim Symes of Pakehau. Tim, would you like to tell us something about your family?
Well, I'll start off with my grandfather, who moved to Hawke's Bay from Waverley in 1914, roughly, and set up a farming enterprise that we still own some of the land that he farmed. He was a third generation New Zealander from Waverley and married another earlier settling family, a Henrietta Jane Constance Brewer. They farmed and had racehorses, South Down Stud, and was a cattle breeder.
How big was the farm at that stage, Tim?
He had 1,500 acres on the Hiratonga Plains.
They were flats, weren't they?
Flats, yes. And several blocks. There was 350 acres at the northern end of Pokawa, and he had lease blocks elsewhere that he farmed. My father was only 3 or 4 when they moved here, and he continued farming after his schooling, and I took over from him in the 70s. My grandparents had 3 daughters and the son. The eldest daughter was Connie Menzies, the second daughter was Rua Stead, and the third daughter was Jean Stead, 2 sisters, married brothers. There is a book on the family which was done by a distant cousin, which I'm reading a few notes out, because most of my recollections of the history are actually hearsay, seeing I wasn't born until 1945. My mother was from Gisborne, from a family that arrived out in the 1870s, and we still have a lot of relations in Gisborne.
What was the family name in Gisborne?
My mother was born Judy Rutledge. They lived on a farm at Moanui in Matawai. Her father had come from Australia after the 1906 drought in Queensland and walked off the farm there, driving cattle 600 miles into Brisbane to sell, and having enough when he arrived in New Zealand to buy a small place at Ruatoria first, and then he moved to Moanui. He married another Connie Reynolds in Gisborne and had 4 children, my mother being the eldest. My parents raced horses, and my mother actually came with racehorses when she married, that she trained herself and show jumped and all the normal sort of things. She could capably do most of the jobs with the horses, including the shoeing. My parents had 4 children, 3 girls and me last. My sister Robin lives in Toronto. All my life, as well as the farming enterprises, which included cropping for Watties from very close to the beginning of the factory, we had racehorses, and all of us could ride, including riding to school in Havelock and galloping along the side of the road beside the school bus so we could beat it. My sister Robin married a Canadian citizen, Willie Bells, and had his 4 children over there.
Where are they in Canada?
Toronto. Helen, my second sister, married Leslie Dunn and had 3 children, Gerald, Kim and Joanna. And Joanna is married to Stuart Train and still lives in the house that was a part of my father's farming enterprise. My third sister, Megan Harvey. Megan married Jim Harvey, real estate agent and auctioneer in Hastings, and they have 2 children, Diane, who lives in London, and Paul, who lives in Hastings. Diane has 2 children, Thomas and Amelia, and Paul has Lizzie and James. I married Robin Walker, who came from Hunterville. Her father died before I met her, but he had a farm right close into Hunterville, a sheep and cattle farm. And her mother was a daughter of Jim Hurley, who had a lot of places in the Hunterville district. We have 4 children, Alice, Wilfred, Ben and Hannah. Alice not married and works in wine warehousing. Wilfred is living with Kate Davies and has 2 daughters and works for his father-in-law, Andy, at Driller's poultry farm. Ben, who's married to Christine, Mowat from Southland, and lives in the cottage at home and is presently growing a small area of crops on the land, which I have mostly leased out to John Bostock. He has three sons, Hugo, Will and Ed. And Hannah, our fourth child, lives in Melbourne, married to George Marino, and is a school teacher over there. She's just built a house at Simpsons Beach in Whittianga, which will be their retirement home one day, but it's quite handy for a holiday house for all of us at the moment.
I don't know Simpsons Beach.
Just past Whittianga.
There's lots of little beaches there. The locals know them.
It's in walking distance of Whittianga. You walk round. It's part of the same bay, along Buffalo Beach and yes. Into there.
Well, that pretty well covers the stud book, doesn't it?
Yes.
So your father must have been a fairly astute judge of land, because all the land that he farmed here was probably the best land in Hawke's Bay.
Yes. The block that I actually live on, my father bought and was extra to what my grandfather had, and is some of the better land around.
Those days they would have grown a lot of ryegrass, fat lambs?
Yes, it was nearly all fat lambs, cattle and ryegrass.
Did they grow any cereals at all? Barley?
We started that at Pakipak in some of the lighter soils, but the irrigation schemes are not like they are now, the central pivots which make life so much easier.
Yes, they take the pain out of the back and put it into the checkbook.
Yes, I think they probably do. So the grass seed we used to have, well, I still have our mill, which we used to harvest maybe 300 acres of grass seed a year. And in those days that was a very dusty job, and bagging it all up.
Was this a tow behind mill?
No, it was 1964 Clayson, one of the early model combine harvesters, self-drive, and apart from minor modifications there has been no real advancement in the new...
That was a yellow colour, wasn't it?
Yes, it still has all the variables and all the bits and pieces that the modern ones have, but they weren't all hydraulically controlled. Some of them are, but on the new mills it's all hydraulic and you just sit there and press buttons, things. But I can do exactly the same job in mine, and after sitting in the shed for 15 years, I got it out 3 years ago and went and harvested some haricot beans for Scott Lawson. And the mill had sat there for 15 years, and it went probably 15 k's out to the end of Ngātirawa Road, and harvested the haricot beans without a single breakdown. Unfortunately, its rubber tyres are starting to look like they've done the years from 1964 to now, and I think the new tyres will cost more than the mill cost originally.
We've always known that the Syme family had this love of horses and was an integral part of the farming. Was it brood mares you were running here? Did you train them?
My parents only had one or two brood mares. My grandfather ran quite a number and imported a stallion or two over the years, and then Bobstead continued with that, his son-in-law, and took over most of the broodmare. But my father ended up, as most people with horses will know, when you have one or two broodmares, you soon end up with 15 or 20 of them. And this happened. I inherited more than 12 broodmares, and at one stage I had 24 or 5 horses unbroken to try at the races, and we set about and broke them all in and got rid of some. And I tried giving brood mares away, and that's not something you manage to do. If you have someone that you want to be a real enemy to, you give them a brood mare.
Yes, because then their problem starts too, because yes. They have a foal and no one wants to sell it, and then there's another foal. And
yeah, that continues.
And of course, you only ever give away the fast ones. You keep all the slow ones for yourself, don't you?
Well, my father bred quite a few good horses over the years. He only ever bought one. He bought a horse called Embrace, He won 7 or 8 races, and he was a half-brother to Light Fingers that won the Melbourne Cup.
Right.
He was never quite as good as her, but he bred a lot of winners, and Dalvoey probably being the best. But first horse he ever raced was a horse called Salon, and I think he won more races with Salon than he won with Dalvoey, who won 17, I think.
He was just a flat racer, he wasn't a hurdler?
No, we tried him hunting later, but he was not awfully good at looking after his legs over the fences. He was a lovely horse to ride, but not...
He dragged them along behind him.
He lowered them into the barbed wires. Yeah. He was a bit special for that. So I've continued with the breeding.
Well, just before we start with the breeding, let's go back to when you were a small boy. You were born in 1945. And you went to school in Havelock North?
I started at Central School in Hastings because my father had gone there. On the second day, I walked home. So I then was taken to Havelock Primary, which I obviously enjoyed more because I didn't walk home. I was then taken to Taupo for my health and went to Taupo Nui Atia College, which was all one school in those days. And I went to the primary school there for a year when the family first bought a house in Taupo, with all the aunts and uncles and different members of the family staying to look after me. And then at 8, I went to Harrowworth and then on to Christ College. And I really enjoyed my time down there.
What sports did you play, Tim?
Certainly not cricket. I was always the scorer because I was always bowled out more or less on the first ball and I couldn't catch a ball. But I played rugby and in the summer months took swimming as a sport. But I ran in the cross-country races. I competed in the New Zealand Championships 1 year, rather ingloriously.
But you still competed?
Yeah, I got to run. It was in the Port Hills in Christchurch. And I might have finished, I think, in the first 40. There were 160 in the...
Did you enjoy your time in Christchurch? It must have been a new adventure for you. Off to Christchurch was a fairly big jump away from home.
No, I boarded at Harrowworth, so it was pretty much the same.
Yes.
There were 10 of us that went at the same time from Harrowworth to Christ. We were actually a little clique.
Are you still in contact?
I see them all at old boys' dinners and things like that.
So you left school and did you come home to work on the farm?
I got into Massey University in the first intake to the vet school. They took 32 of us in and I think 28 got passed. I'm one of the 4 that didn't. They told me not to come back after the 3rd year, probably because I spent most of my time at the races.
You were furthering your education, weren't you?
Was very interesting. The lecturers all used to try and get me to get them tickets for the races.
Yes. I guess in those 3 years you would have learned quite a lot, really, in spite of not making it.
I was very hard-pressed to learn all the Latin names of all the bones on all the animals and those sorts of things. It was too much repetitive hard work, and I'd had what I think was probably an extremely good education up until I went there. The first year at university, I didn't have to work because I'd done it all before. That was the disaster. If I'd been to a local school that hadn't extended us quite like Christ's did, I probably would have had to keep working much harder all the way through.
So after that, you left Massey?
Yeah, that was about 1966, I suppose. And I worked with the horses with my parents, and we had a particularly good spell with winning a lot of races for a year or two.
So were you active in training them?
I was working on the farm, driving a tractor, but we had 2 men that also drove tractors, and so I'd only had to fill in when they weren't doing it. So I had quite a lot of time to ride the horses. And we used to ride into the track in town for gallop mornings. We didn't transport the horses like we do nowadays. We used to ride in there, work them at the track, and then ride them home, which is sort of 4 miles in and 4 miles back, so they got a lot more work than they get nowadays.
We took it for granted that horses were always put in a track and carted, and interviewed someone recently and they said they used to live up in Crownthorpe, and when they used to compete on the show, all the people used to ride their horses down to compete.
We used to ride to the Ilthorpe Sports. We used to ride through Havelock, through the Chambers property, across the Tukituk River at Horseshoe Bend, and ride all the way down to Tukituk, probably 30 miles. I don't remember too many of those trips, but I do remember riding 12 miles out to the Murakākaha Sports and others. And when we went to the Hawke's Bay show and we'd be showing our ponies in the ring classes and things, we would ride them there on the morning before they went in the ring classes. And it used to make them much better behave. None of us prancing around and being flighty after they'd ridden 6 miles or 7 miles to get there.
Did you do show jumping, competitive equestrian work at the shows?
I did for a while. I competed, but I never had, with the racehorses, we never quite had the access to the show jumping types. We had some that we schooled up and took, but I then went on an overseas trip. I had competed at the March show at the showgrounds, now the Horse of the Year show, but I went overseas for only 6 months, and when I came back I found they were jumping about a foot higher than they were when I left. The improvement in the late 60s was enormous.
So what brought that about?
Just the fact that there was more show jumping, and I did a lot of training with Colum and Bulger and different ones, but I never had a horse that looked like it was going to jump to those kinds of levels.
When you came home and started running the farm?
Well, I came home after 6 months overseas, and I think it was probably in 69, and my father had just been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, which meant he could do very little on the farm in those days. And so I took over running the farm, and a brother-in-law took over half, and I took over the 200 acres here, and have farmed it ever since. My father used to help me for a while feeding out, but I sort of made all the decisions for some time, and he was busy helping me feed out, and he hit the wrong foot brake of the tractor and rolled it into the Awanui stream, threw me off the transport tray one way, and he went the other way with the tractor, and I found that the safety frame had dug into the creek, flipping it completely over him, and he was just out cold on the ground. And I brought him back up to the cottage, because the tractor was kaput by that stage, underwater, not enjoying it much. And my father and I walked back up to the cottage where I lived with Robin at that stage, and I think probably before we had any children. And he had a very strong drink, a tumbler full of whiskey, and we got my mother to come down and pick him up and checked out that he was okay. He never helped on the farm again after that. In fact, he signed it over to me the next day and at the lawyer's.
So during that period then, you said you used to have a couple of people driving tractors for you. You would have had Fordson tractors those days, I'd imagine.
Yes, yes.
You've always had Fordson tractors, haven't you?
Yes, they've always been the blue ones or whatever. But yeah, we had them, and I think I still have two of them. They're 1964 models. They've become extremely expensive to replace, and with the farm mostly leased out, we can manage with just keeping one going that'll do most things that we need.
When you look at the replacement cost of a tractor these days, you wonder how people can justify them.
Not unless you're growing a huge area of crops.
Yes.
The farm is leased to John Bostock, and that I've had this discussion with John, who's got himself into a pretty big way, and he can buy a tractor or two every year, I think, but unless you're growing in the thousands of acres, it's not possible.
Prior to you leasing to the Bostock Enterprise, you grew a lot of crops for Watties?
Yes, grew peas and beans, double cropping them, and then we started growing tomatoes for a few years until Watties decided to go to six growers only. It took a few years after that for me to lease the farm out. We had some good years, but I think probably only one in 15 was better than leasing the
farm out. You're absolutely right. You're always hoping for a big crop next year to cover the losses.
Well, yeah, we used to make a profit, but not a big one. No. When you grow tomatoes for 10 cents a kilo, it's hard to get rich on them.
I always remember Barry Davidson, the factory manager, when we went in to negotiate the prices of peas. They were not sympathetic to us as growers. We were just providers of raw material for the factory, weren't we?
Yes. They even told us once that if we gave them the tomatoes for free, they still wouldn't be competitive with the ones they were getting out of China. And we felt that wasn't our problem, that was their problem. They were paying too much for other things, but didn't work out in our favour in the long term.
So now you've leased the farm, and you've got, I suppose, your interest still with horses. You go to the track some days during the week, don't you?
I go occasionally at the moment. I've been stopped for a little while. I'm hoping to get back to taking horses back into the track again shortly.
It must be quite envious when you see some of the prices they get for horses at Karaka these days.
It's an interesting thing. They've always been sales. You'd love to do the figures on all the high-priced ones and see how much they win. It doesn't work out, like they say. There will be quite a few out of the sales that will pay their way, some exceptionally well, and there will only be a handful of people that will make money out of them.
Yeah. Just going back historically, your parents built this homestead here, didn't they?
Altered it. This homestead was built much earlier, sometime in the 1860s or 70s.
Well, who would have farmed this before your family?
My father bought from Lockie and McPhee, and Lockie was a Scottish schoolteacher who came out to New Zealand and named the place Wellfield after his home in Scotland. His family went out of farming, and one of them developed a electrical supply company and went back into racehorses and called this place Wellfield Stud down in Palmerston, which has since been on sold to other people. So the McPhees were another Hawke's Bay family. I think they were just a partner with the Lockie one who found the place.
Yes.
So that was 1938 or 39, my father bought this place, and he did some alterations to the house. I added to it quite a bit in the late 70s. Pulled down, there was the old lean-to style kitchen on the back, and I pulled all that off and built a new bedroom.
Prior to the family living here and buying this block, obviously your grandfather owned quite a lot of land already in this area.
Yeah.
Where was the homestead?
That was Richmond Park, which is now called Sasnoff. And my father inherited that, but my mother wouldn't shift there. She said the house needed too much doing to it. And my uncle and aunt, Ruhr Stead and Bob, who was already farming the land attached with the house as a horse stud, moved into the house. And the other uncle, Alex Stead, when he married, they built a house for him on my grandmother's estate, which was between here and there. That was the Symes estate that Alex, at the end of Riddersley Road. They had 400 and something acres, 450 acres in there.
Big land owners.
Yeah. Well, it went from Longlands Road right through to Pakipak, apart from small holdings along the edge. My aunt Connie Menzies sold the land to Bothwicks for the freezing works that they built and were demolished in the 31 earthquake. And other than that, the land went through to where Angus's had a feedlot and horse training over there. That was part of my grandfather's holding. My father sold it to a friend of his, a Pat Bellaby, and sold 100 acres off the back of the Pakipak block as well, down Rossa Road. All now settled in small lifestyle blocks.
Yes. So when you were talking about having 300 acres of ryegrass to thresh, that was a pretty big exercise those days, because it was at the end of the box mill and the beginning of the...
We had a mobile one before the Gleason, which people used to stand on the back and ram the grass seed, and that was towed by a tractor. And that was... The chaps on the back, it was hard work, and they looked like... They were dusty, and all you could see was, at the end of the day, was the whites of their eyes if they weren't crying.
It was a terrible job on the mill.
And cough, and splutter, and all of them would sit down in between and have a cigarette.
When you presented that amount of ryegrass seed to whichever company you were dealing with, that must have been quite a big exercise as well. That's a hell of a lot of sacks of ryegrass.
Yeah, it was. And it was all hand-loaded onto the trucks and hand-loaded off at the other end, at least at the Williams and Kettles door between Queen Street and Hiratonga Street. They used to drive the trucks down in, and you used to offload onto the level at the same size of the truck.
That's right.
They built up the floor. Any of the others, it was all hard work.
The Hawke's Bay farmers you could back in. And yeah. Load to the same level, but that was a pretty huckery old seed store too. These centre pivot irrigators, I see there's one over on the Puckypuck Stortford Lodge.
Yes.
There's one there and you've got
that
one
was a
here.
Block I had.
Do you have to put those in, or do they put in by the lessees?
The lessees have put those in, and after a certain amount of time they progressively become ours. He's depreciating them and we end up owning them at the end of the lease. We've got one here too. I've got a pretty big one out here.
It's huge. I saw it working one day and I thought, oh, and I think Tim having to move all those pipes once upon a time.
I still got all the pipes. Yeah. Can't sell the buggers.
No. When I developed that 60 acres of mine into orchard and vineyard and so forth, I put all mains pipes underground for the irrigation. 20 years later, the orchard was pulled out. All that stuff underground, they just rip it up with the big rippers.
They came in here and I had 6-inch main all around
yes.
the farm, and the rippers went through in one paddock. But John needed, before the central pivots came in, he used cotton reel irrigation, and he needed all the things, so he brought a digger in and we lowered it all below the level of the rippers. It was a huge job. You had to dig it up deep enough to drop it in another 9 inches or 10 inches to be below the deep rippers. We did that and we pulled one line out, but most of the farm is still able to be irrigated with pipes from these main takeoffs. If the pivot breaks down or blows over in a gale, we can always save a crop if we have to. I've got enough pipes to irrigate the whole 200 acres.
So do you have any other land apart from this homestead block?
No, I had the share in the Puckypuck land, and I sold 3/4 of it to my sister that lives in Toronto, and 1/4 to Joanna and Stuart Train, who's Helen Dunn's daughter and son-in-law.
Now, you spend a bit of time in Australia, don't you? You've got a sister there?
No, a daughter.
And they're farming?
No, those ones are... That's Mary and Max Smith. My first cousin lives just out of Orange. And she's Ruhr and Bobstead's second daughter. But I've been to visit 2 or 3 times.
Now, do you and Robin have any other interests outside horses and farming? I know you've always had an interest in politics.
Yes, tired of that, I think. But Robin plays golf at Bridge Par and can't understand how she doesn't get better.
You're not meant to get better at golf, that's par for the course.
Yes, she's still waiting for her first hole in one.
Do you travel at all, Tim?
Not me particularly, because I find walking can be a bit of a problem with my injuries from horse riding. But Robin travels quite extensively.
Just coming back to your horse days, did you break the horses yourself?
Early on, yes. More recently, I've had other people do it. I seem to have lost the patience for doing the job properly. I like things to happen far too quickly.
Has someone shot the parrot, or is it his sleepy time?
He's right behind you.
He hasn't said a word. He's listening to us.
Yes, he's listening right there. Can you see him?
I know he's there, but when we started, he was chattering away. Now, Tim, would you like to tell me something about relations around your family? Because I know you have a wide dispersal of people you're related to in Hawke's Bay.
Well, from my mother's family and her mother, who was a Reynolds, we've got Gaddams and Burks and Gisborne, and becomes quite a large family. They're fairly good breeders before the time of TV. And further back on that side, the Sunderland relations, and that includes the Giblins and the Nelsons and one or two others.
Down at Undercliff, there was a family there, Sunderlands. Were they any relation to you?
Yes, that was my mother's uncle. Great uncle, I think. He was the manager for William Nelson for the Timona Freezing Works. And his sister was William Nelson's fourth wife.
I didn't realise that William Nelson had four wives. Gosh, it's a wonder he had time to develop freezing works.
Maybe he needed to get out from the house.
So then Ozzie Nelson, he was related to you too. Ozzie used to live in the Mangapapa.
He was a second cousin of my mother's. He lived in Mangapapa.
He used to come to our farm rabbiting. He was a great rabbiter. He had a bevy of dogs and a shotgun.
My parents went there for dinner at Mangapapa when they came home from their honeymoon. And I think Cousin Gladys was Oswald's wife. And she came in and announced that dinner was served. And as they went into the dining room, they saw the last of the rabbiters' pack disappearing out the door, with the window with the roast.
Oh, you're joking!
So those are some of the relations. So that's Dick and Punch's parents. Another story from their honeymoon is they were staying at Bert Symes's place in Waverley, and a two-storied house, brand new. And the twins climbed out of their bedroom window down the water tank and were off across the farm. My father said he would have tanned both their hides.
How old were the twins?
Three.
You're joking! Is it interesting that your grandparents came from Waverley to Hawke's Bay? That was interesting because Waverley was such a green, grassy area, lovely hill, you know.
My grandfather, Alf, farmed in partnership with his older brother, Bert. And the family story is all of them moved away to get away from Bert, who was a hard taskmaster. They moved far and wide. Uncle Stuart went to Wairoa. Uncle Harold went to Gisborne and ran the Munga 2 blocks for the Marion Corporation.
Well, that's as far away as you could get from Waverley, isn't it?
More or less. Bert, the eldest, nearly made it to 100. He would have been the first member of the family to make 100, but he died 2 weeks short of his 100th birthday after walking from the old people's home down the hill at Whanganui to watch a football game, which was probably a 3-mile walk, and then walking back afterwards, and he caught pneumonia.
Yes, they were tough.
They were a different breed. They could do all the things on the farm. Alf could blade shear between 200 and 300 sheep a day. And I've since been told by ones that worked for him that he had the most violent temper if they did something wrong, but completely forgotten about half an hour later. So we've covered some of the relations there. The Rutledge relations is a big family, huge in Australia. William Rutledge, my grandmother's grandfather, founded a stock and station agency which went spectacularly bankrupt in 1860. Until then, they'd printed their own money and all sorts of things.
What area was that in?
He was at Port Fairy, south of Melbourne. It's on the Great Ocean Road. And in the 1850s, He had a fleet of ships exporting wool to England, and he sent more gold out from Port Fairy to Europe than the Port of Melbourne did. He was one of what you would now call one of the super rich, but he was in England for 2 years for the children's education when the firm went bankrupt, and his brother-in-laws didn't manage to save the business, but he was a director of the Commercial Bank of Australia and one of the founding members of became Westpac, the bank of New South Wales. And another brother-in-law founded CSR, Colonial Sugar.
Did you ever run across a book called The Cattle King about the chap Kidson?
Yes, I've read it. I've got that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you're talking about this relation of yours, exporting all this stuff.
I've got books on him. He also was known as Terrible Billy. He got himself elected to the Parliament in Melbourne and assaulted the Speaker of the House on the steps of Parliament, was sent to jail. But he couldn't be a member of Parliament once you'd been jailed, but his constituents re-elected him immediately. But he died, and my grandfather, William Leslie Rutledge, could remember him.
Now, you haven't had many relations in the South Island, have you?
No.
Obviously, they were all warm weather people.
Well, maybe.
Because one of you married someone from Southland.
Ben did. He went to Dunedin, get as far away from his parents as he could for his university years.
Just coming back, we're probably getting near the end of what we need to do. I always remember the first time I really met you was you and Doug Twigg formed a deputation and called on me. You'd been charged by the then Hawke's Bay Electric chairman to go out and form two more branches, and one of them was Brookvale. And I was the one that invited Michael Laws to come and see whether it was worth standing for the Hawke's Bay electorate. But that's a while ago, isn't it?
It is, yes. Politics is so difficult. I don't know that it was a huge mistake getting Michael Laws. I've got a funny feeling the National Party needed shaking up at times. Well, and that actually did some good.
Well, it did. But, yeah, he wouldn't compromise.
The National Party involvement, I went back for quite a few years, but the disheartening thing to me was the recovery after the Douglas years, when school fees and everything else like that became oppressive. And Ruth Richardson promised to give help to the private schools, and in the first budget she did it after they got re-elected. It was a year until it happened, and it was less than the GST on the fees. I have never made a donation to the National Party since.
It was as if she wasn't hearing. She didn't seem to understand.
My, you know, was possibly self-interest, but I put four children through boarding school, and it cost a lot of money. And the fact that it was no longer supported by the government meant that we were paying taxes for our children to have been educated and paying ourselves.
Can you think of anything else that we haven't covered? Because you're probably busting to get out into those potatoes.
No, I'm not. It's too hot.
So, Tim, this is great that you've given me some time to carry out this interview. If there's anything that we've missed, we can always do an addendum to it.
Yeah.
So at this point, then, we can relax.